tēnā koutou katoa. He honore ke te atua. He karoria ke te atua. Mangarongo ki te whenua. Ko Tim Palmer, toku ungewa. It's a real privilege to be able to share with you today as we look at the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke's Gospel, Luke chapter 10. It's a familiar story. It's potentially, we could see it as a kid's story. It's a story about being really, really nice to people. And yes, it is all of those things, and yet so much more. One pastor I was reading about recently described this as a story that transforms the whole world. They went on to describe, and this was Hill Carmichael, an experience of listening to the lecturers at Bible College, looking at the story in a way that I hadn't really seen before, recognizing three different types of characters in the story of the Good Samaritan. The first type of person is the one who is represented by the robber, the thief. They have this mentality, what's yours is mine, an entitlement. I feel like I deserve what you have. In fact, I'm willing to cause harm in order to get it. What's yours is mine. The second type of person represented in the story are the Levites and the priests. And they might be saying, what's mine is mine. What I have, my time, it belongs to me. My resources, they belong to me. And yet the third person represented in the story, third type of person, was described as the Good Samaritan. And let me read what was written. Along one of the most dangerous roads in all of history, this person seemed to live by an ethic of love, to live by a code that says, what is mine is yours if you have need of it. My safety is yours if you need it. My security is yours if you need it. My resources are yours if you have need of them. My health is tied to your health. My well-being is tied to your well-being. It's a profound way to see these characters in this well-familiar story. And this is why it could be described as a story that transforms the world. If this is what Jesus is asking of us in order to be a neighbor and show mercy, then truly this would transform the world. I find myself relating the most to that second category of people, the priests, the Levites, that feeling of what's mine is mine. And I have to be honest that during this time of lockdown, especially after 4 weeks, it's very easy to become inward focused. It's very easy to become comfortable within our bubbles. And we're just looking for that place of contentment. We're not rubbing shoulders with people as much and the needs of the world around us. And so it's easy to get inward focused at this time. I don't know about you, I want to share a little illustration that demonstrates this. On that very first day when we were called into level 4 lockdown, and the announcement had been made that there was a COVID case within the community, and there was already speculation that we'd be going into lockdown, there were people already at the supermarkets panic buying, and even though the announcement hadn't been made that would be going into lockdown. Now, my reaction to that, before we went into lockdown, my reaction, the first thing I did, so I got my laptop, opened it up, and opened up the Pack and Save online order, and booked myself a slot a few days later, just so that I knew that I would be okay, that we would have enough, that I would be able to get my order in. We do all of our shopping online, or at least most of it. And so it's interesting that my very first reaction was not, how is everyone else? Are they going to be okay? What's their situation? My first reaction was to go, are we going to be okay? Make sure that we've got enough in our home. Even though there was nothing that I could think of that we actually needed. I still felt the need to book in this online ordering slot. And so I've been challenged, particularly this week, about the comfort of my own bubble, when the heart of Jesus would be sitting with the stranger on the street. When we look at the story, it's very familiar to us. There's the priest, the Levite, who go out of their way to pass by this person in need, this person who's beat up on the roadside. And they pass, cross over to the other side of the street, perhaps. And I wondered if we all have some kind of avoidance strategies when we don't want to fully engage with situations around us. I want to share some of my avoidance strategies, and maybe you could check off, like hold up your hand and see if you have any of these as well. I hope you don't. But here's a little example. I'm going to the warehouse, and at the warehouse I've got out of the car at the car park. This is months ago, before lockdown. And I see someone at the sausage sizzle, selling sausages. I don't want a sausage. And the person there is selling quite boldly with a very loud voice. So I avoid the situation. I go around to them. I divert my eyes so that I don't have eye contact with them. Have you checked any of these things yet? I divert my eyes. I walk a little bit faster. I want to avoid contact. But then just as you get into the entrance of the warehouse, there is another set of people. People representing some well-meaning organization trying to raise some money. I can't go around them this time. And so I have a new strategy for this kind of moment. This is what I do. I look them in the eye and I say, "Well done, this is so good what you're doing. But I'm really sorry, I'm not able to at this time." And then I continue walking. How many fingers have you got? Here's another one. A letter comes in the post from an amazing organization doing incredible stuff around the world. I've supported them in the past. I love the work that they are doing. And yet, before I even open it and have a look at the letter, I throw it into the bin. I've done that. Here's another example. I hear about a situation, a problem I read in the newspaper, and then there's part of me that instead of stirring a sense of mercy and compassion, there's this little reaction within me that says, I wonder if they're handling their money right. I wonder if they got themselves into this situation and I've already passed some kind of a judgment before I've even had time to feel compassionate and merciful. Or other times when I see a need and my reaction has been, you know what, I pay my taxes and that tax money goes to support welfare systems and that sort of thing. I've already done my bit. I don't need to do anything else. Can you identify with any of those things? But those kind of attitudes represent that subtle dynamic of what's mine is mine, and I want to hold on to it. And in lockdown, it seems to be that those feelings are heightened for some reason. It's already hard enough in the world, the society that we live in. Every nation has its idol. And in New Zealand, we do have idols of materialism, possessiveness, individualization. We have a mentality that we deserve stuff and we hold on to it. Now, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of generosity in our community. And we're going to hear the story of Alessia Ali and Dan and the incredible things that God has led them to do within the community. There are some incredible stories of generosity in our society. But I do want to explain that in our world in New Zealand, there is a culture of entitlement and holding on and possessiveness. What's mine is mine. And that's reinforced at this time by the self-preservation mentality that goes hand in hand with lockdown. I'm the priest passing by. I'm the Levite looking in the other direction. Who is my neighbor? And I want to quickly say those things that I raise, it's not about guilt. It's not that. It's about mercy and compassion. It's not about some communistic political view of sharing resources around in that kind of a way. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about mercy. It's not about duty or giving out of compulsion. It's about mercy. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. The expert in the law who was having a conversation with Jesus, he knows the right answer. He knows this great commandment and goes on to say, love your neighbor as yourself. He knows the right thing to say. He has memorized it since he was a child. That's right, Jesus says. Go and do this and you will live. And just as he's turning to leave, this expert in the law wants to make sure, wants to clear things up. He wants to make sure that he has ticked all the boxes and done all of the right things. He wants to make sure that he will be justified. And so he asks this question. And who? Who is my neighbor? And it's at this point that Jesus shares this story, the story that we've come to know as the story of the Good Samaritan. It's at this point in the final remarks of the story, and Jesus asks him back the same question, and who is the one who was a neighbor in that story? Was it the priest? Was it the Levite? And the man responds, it was the one who showed mercy. The neighbor is not based on physical proximity, although that might be part of it. To be a neighbor is defined by Jesus as the one who shows mercy. May our hearts be full of mercy. I grew up listening to the stories of Keith Green and the music of Keith Green. And so this story is etched in my mind, set to music and sung from the perspective of the victim. Well, first a priest and then another of my kind. They were men I should have trusted, and yet they acted deaf and blind. They were strangers on the road to Jericho. I'm going to read a quote from a famous speech. I wonder if you can guess who said these words by the end of what I share. Here are the words. See if you recognize them. And you know, it's possible that the priest and the Levite looked over the man on the ground and wondered if the robbers were still around. Or it's possible that they felt that the man on the ground was merely faking it. And he was acting like he had been robbed and hurt in order to seize them over there, lure them there for quick and easy seizure. And so the first question that the Levite asked was, if I stop to help this man, what will happen to me? But then the Good Samaritan came by and he reversed the question. If I do not stop to help this man, what will happen to him? And that's the question I put before you tonight. Do you recognize these words of a famous speech? The speech that goes on to say, I've been to the mountaintop, I've looked over, I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but we as a people will get to the promised land. This is Martin Luther King. And this is his last speech before he was assassinated. This is a man who knows the risk of the cause. And this final message that he shares was quite profound in its connection with this Good Samaritan story, because he understands the risk, because his own life had been at threat. And then we find that he would himself be assassinated. There is this incredible cost of serving in the kingdom at times. And there we see this Samaritan man is willing to pay that cost, willing to take a risk, willing to put himself in danger, willing even to share his own possessions, to give 2 days of wages in order to care for a stranger that he does not know. Who is your neighbor? And as I think about this, I remember back to the time when I first started working at World Vision. I was there for about 5 years. When I first started there, there was a crisis in Kosovo. There were refugees from Rwanda. And my heart was just so stirred and moved with compassion for these things. I found over time, though, when almost every day there'd be this new report that would come in on the email, a new explanation of things that were happening around the world, different wars, different famines, the statistics of who was dying and the different diseases that were happening, and every day we'd get these global reports, and somewhere along the lines that I found myself kind of fatigued with that sense of compassion. You can't keep pouring out and loving generously for the whole world when you see the enormity of need every single day. And you might be feeling the same way, and even just as you look at the media and the news from around the world, it's sort of like you get overloaded. I read this article recently that really resonated with me. It described the way that we as people were wired to be in a village rather than a globe. We're wired in a way that we have the capacity to have a connection with a couple of hundred people or even a few thousand, but not to have the capacity for 6 or 7 billion people. We just don't have that capacity. So what do we do? Do we pour ourselves out and respond to every need? Do we become calloused and numb to those things? Now, think about calluses. I play the guitar, as you know. And when I play the guitar a lot, I get calluses on my fingers. And so when I'm pressing hard on the strings, those calluses can be a good thing because I feel less pain. It doesn't hurt as much. But the problem is, what happens when our hearts become calloused, when we no longer have the mercy and compassion that Jesus is calling us to, when we're no longer a neighbor because we no longer have mercy? We feel like we've done our bit. It's someone else's responsibility. What's mine is mine, and Jesus is sitting with the stranger on the seat. At that time, when I was working at World Vision and thinking about my heart, worrying that I was getting calloused in my heart, I heard this phrase, and it became my prayer as well. Lord, may my heart be tender and my hands be calloused. I think it was based on a song. I've never heard that song before. But what resonated with me was this desire. May my hands be calloused. May I be seen and found to be doing God's work, serving with all of my heart and strength and energy, loving the Lord my God with all of my strength. But may my heart remain tender to the things of God. May I never lose that sense of compassion. May I never lose that sense of mercy. And so this week, Jesus has been reminding me through this story, the story of the Good Samaritan, that he calls us to be people who are merciful, who follow the heart of God, because the heart of God is sitting with Jesus and the stranger on the street. I pray that this week God may prompt you to know who he is calling you to be a neighbor to. I pray that God might prompt you with wisdom and ideas, that the situations that you stumble upon, you will have the wisdom to know, is this something, Lord, that you're asking me to respond to? Is this something that you're calling me to be generous with? We're going to look at a few different ideas that you could pick up as a rhythm this week as we pray for and care for the communities around us. But I love these words from Micah 6, verse 8. He has showed you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of us but to act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. I'd like to close with the words, the reading from Scripture of the story. And as we listen for this final time to these words of Scripture, as we listen to the story, now that we have heard the message about it, I wonder if you could take time to think about which parts stand out to you and what is Jesus saying to you at this time. From Luke 10. A man was going to Jericho from Jerusalem when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes. They beat him. They went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. And so too, a Levite, when he came to the place and he saw him, he passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came to where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he brought the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 days' wages and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense that you have made. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers? The expert in the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. And Jesus told him, go and do likewise.